Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, podcast people. Hello, listeners. Hello, video viewers.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode of the show. Today I'm talking to Anna Brooke. Hello, Anna.
Hi, that's me.
Welcome to the podcast. Is this your first podcast?
It's not, actually. But it's my first podcast being interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
I did a little job for a company and I was interviewing people for the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were interviewing people for a show?
Yeah. It was for a brand. I'm not going to like promote anything,
but
it was for a brand and they wanted their employees to talk about stuff and I interviewed them. Yeah.
Okay, very good. So you're not completely new to this.
No.
Plus, you've done music and stuff in the past as
music
well.
Music and I was the narrator of a heavy metal show.
You were the narrator of a heavy metal show.
Yeah.
We've already started, listeners. This was not the intended subject.
This is the tangent.
This is the first tangent. Here we go. Let's ride the tangent train. You were the narrator of a heavy metal show.
Yeah, the English narrator. It was a show in French.
Okay.
And
what kind of show? Stage show?
No. It was on TV.
What's a heavy metal show on TV?
So it was like loads of interviews of heavy metal bands, and with like sort of like a news thing, like when they were bringing out albums and stuff like that. And I would translate the narrator part and then narrate it. It was really, I loved it. It was really good fun.
Yeah, I bet that was really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've worked with microphones and...
Yeah, I like a good mic.
Yeah. Me too. Okay, so Anna, hello. How do we know each other, by the way?
Well, our kids go to the same school.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And so that's how we met.
And in Paris, we both live in Paris.
We both live in Paris.
Yeah.
Because it would be difficult if our kids went to the same school and
but
we didn't
but
live...
But not impossible. I could fly in. Well, you could fly in. Yeah.
Helicopter.
Yeah.
But that's not the lifestyle that we have.
No, it isn't.
Next question, Anna. Where do you come from?
So I am from Birmingham originally, which is in the centre of England.
The Midlands.
The Midlands, yeah. And then you're from the Midlands, aren't you?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Half from the Midlands and half from the west of London.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
a mix of the two.
That's why you haven't got the same accent as me.
But sometimes the accent comes back.
Does it?
Sometimes I start speaking.
Did you ever have a Brummie accent?
Not really, but then when I was living in the Midlands and I would hang out with my friends who definitely did have sort of Solihull accents.
Oh, yeah.
Then sometimes it would come back a bit more like that and I'd start speaking.
My
like
accent comes back if I had a lot to drink quite often.
Really?
Actually, I do that now. It's not very good. I haven't done it for a while.
Which part of Birmingham?
So I was from Northfield, which is, I don't even know which part of Birmingham that is, because when I was 10, we moved up to Yorkshire. So I've got more of a Yorkshire accent, but I've sort of neutralised.
Yeah, it sounds pretty neutralised right now. You don't have a particularly strong regional accent, as far as I can tell. But then sometimes I hear little traces of a Brummie accent in your voice.
Yeah, it's like a flat I. The I.
Oi.
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 Oi. Yeah.
Yeah, not
and
I,
then, and you'll get
oi.
A bit of the Yorkshire L, and which for like people who don't come from Britain, it's really hard to actually understand how many accents there are in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you probably talked about it on these podcasts like lots of times, but it really is. And you can like even tell people from like, I don't know, 20 kilometres away, they'll have a slightly different accent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I sometimes sit on the metro and when there are like tourists in Paris, I like sit next to them and then listen in and try and work out where they're from, what their lifestyle kind of is, because you can almost often guess things.
It's true.
And, yeah.
Especially if they are British, you can kind of profile a person just from their voice.
Yeah.
So you can work out where they come from and what kind of social background they've got.
Yeah.
We should probably
it's scary.
We shouldn't.
You shouldn't, yeah.
But you kind of can.
Yeah.
But your accent reveals so much about you, doesn't it? Yes. Okay. So from the Midlands, but living in Paris, how long have you been in Paris? A long time?
23 years.
23 years.
I've been here this year. I would have been here more than half my life, which I find flabbergasting.
It's incredible.
Because, I came out, I studied French at university and I came out thinking I would spend, after university, I thought I'd spend a year, 2 years maximum. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a long time.
Okay.
And how long have you been here now?
Let's see, 2012. So this is year 11.
11. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently you renew your cells in your body every 9 years.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know when you last renewed them, but there are chances that you have entirely French, like Parisian cell renewal now, like after 9 years, more than 9 years here.
So after over 800 episodes of this show, I think I may have talked about everything, and I've talked about, you know, regenerating your body.
Yeah.
This is listeners, viewers who don't remember that episode where I talked about that at some length, having no scientific knowledge of
I don't have any either.
But yeah, it's true. Apparently your cells renew, and there's something like a cycle of 7 or 11 years where pretty much all the cells in your body renew over that period. But some cells don't. Some cells don't renew, including like some bone marrow cells and other cells in the bones and things like that. So it's not a complete regeneration.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, maybe largely I've regenerated into a French man called Luc.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I am Anna.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. How's your French?
My French is very good.
Yeah. How did you do that then?
I studied French university, but I didn't speak very good French even until I came to live in Paris on my year abroad. And then I just kind of have to get on with it. And then after 23 years,
When did that? I mean, okay, you had the sort of, you did A level or degree level?
I did A level, then degree.
Okay. Yeah.
But even then, I didn't speak it.
But you'd studied it at degree level for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Grammar. Well, I mean, not just the grammar, but
the phonology.
Yes, and the musicality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had to listen to, like what people are doing here, to listen to the English, we'd do it for French. Yeah.
So that means that the rhythm of it and
The rhythm and intonation and let your ears absorb it so that you can sort of try and reproduce it.
That's a pretty good foundation, even though maybe you didn't speak fluently or socially after that degree. It's a pretty good starting point.
I would say.
And then you came to France expecting just to stay for a while, but then you kind of got absorbed in French life to an extent.
Yeah,
right?
I had this weird thing where I was lucky because on my year abroad I met three girls who have become and still are like my best friends, and they were obsessed with English. They loved English. So
they're
French, yeah. And so they were obsessed with English, but they didn't necessarily want to speak English with me. And so it meant I surrounded myself, like we were like a little group, and we would only speak French, and I'm sure that helped me a lot.
Absolutely.
And I had a colleague when I was on my year abroad, and she would literally correct me all the time. Sometimes it would be really annoying, like I would get three words out and she'd be like, no. And but I think that really genuinely helped. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And you worked in French as well at times, did you?
Yes. Yes, I did. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did. Well, I always needed the English. That was like, yeah. But I did work in French, yeah.
Because I remember when I first met you, you talked about how for some time you were kind of totally absorbed in like in a French bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all French this, French that, everything
was
French.
I was obsessed.
French
like,
people,
as well.
French language, French this, French that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And voila, as a result, your French is like, what, I guess, proficient enough where you can translate between the two languages.
Yeah, I can't write. I mean, I can write in French, but I wouldn't ever, like, write a book
But
in
neither
French.
Can French people can't write. Because French is difficult. French grammar is difficult.
Yeah, it is difficult.
And,
yeah, yeah.
Like everyone needs like their little Becherel book.
The grammar. You have to like, it's very hard to remember.
All the conjugations and stuff. A lot of French people need to refer to those things as well when they write.
But what I find quite scary when French people ask me stuff in English.
Yes.
It's like they'll be like, why do you say this like that? And we don't learn grammar. Oh, well, we didn't. I mean, I didn't. Did you when you were at school?
No.
Like English grammar?
No.
Like I learned more about English grammar through having learned French than like...
Yes.
I'd love
You want me to put the bag the tea's not finished in your cup?
Yeah, I know, but my tea will never get finished. I don't like the cold bit at the bottom.
Everyone's got their own slightly different way of making their tea. Everyone's got their own particular way. And I wouldn't personally put a fresh tea bag, into a mug that has some tea in the bottom.
Because it doesn't taste the same the second time round.
I don't know. You're okay with this.
I'm fine, yeah.
Okay, so the tea bag goes in the cup... all right, so listeners, there is a video version of this, but as usual, we will try to remember that those audio people can't see what's happening.
Oh, yes, so we're making tea.
We're making tea. So we have to describe what's going on.
Would you like some milk?
Yes, I would like some milk, but I'm not ready for milk right now.
Do you know which order you should put milk in?
I would put milk in second.
Okay, so there is apparently, according to your wealth, like hundreds of years ago, your social status, if you were quite poor and you only had a certain amount of milk, you would pour the milk in before you poured the water in. Because that meant that you would only use up the amount of milk that you had.
Right, because the milk to tea ratio is quite important, listeners.
For today, nowadays. Yeah,
right, because you want to get... But the point is that everyone has their preference where you don't want too much milk compared to the tea and you don't want too little milk compared to the tea.
Yeah, you want
the right balance.
Yeah.
So if you're poor and you've got a limited amount of milk, you would put that amount of milk in and
first.
Then you would add the requisite... You would then brew the tea in the cup until... Or you'd add enough tea until you got the balance right.
Actually, I presume that you would want the balance right. I never thought about that. I just thought that you would have a little bit less milk. But
You put the milk in first in order to ration the amount of milk that you use because then you can balance it out with the tea that you add in afterwards.
Exactly.
Whereas if you're upper class,
you could pour the milk as
in
much
afterwards.
As you, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There's so many different theories. We were talking about this actually the other day. I was talking about this with some of the other parents at school when we went for
English parents or American parents.
With the English parents. Yeah. And talking about how there are certain things that will divide the UK even more than Brexit, right? And one of those things is, do you put the milk in first or do you put the milk in after you've put the tea in the cup?
Yeah, yeah.
And
what I hate is in Parisian cafes, mm-hmm. where there's not the same tea culture, it's obviously coffee culture, generally speaking, they'll often bring you a pot of hot water and the sachet on the side or this you get this.
Oh, yeah.
And
I could go off on a big rant.
Yeah, you
about
have
that.
To have the water poured at a specific temperature. It has to be boiling.
Boiling.
Yeah, yeah, for it to go on top.
Boiling water on the top, but what you often get in a French cafe. But fair enough, they don't have the same culture. But what they give to you is a metal
teapot.
Yeah. With hot water in it, but it's got to be about 80 degrees, 70 degrees, because they've taken that hot water out of
which is like herbal tea temperature, isn't it? It's not like
English breakfast tea.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we're getting really badly sidetracked here.
We are,
totally. Or really well sidetracked. the main reason that you're here is so we can talk about your book, because you are a writer amongst other many things that
at
the moment, the main thing that you're doing is writing. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and
I'll show it.
You've had
I'll
a book. You've had a book published. You've had a number of books published, but this is... So tell us about Monster Bogey.
So
Monster Bogey is the name of the book, listeners, by Anna Brook. And, you know, you've got a proper publishing deal for this.
Yeah, I'll show you. It's got little nose holes, look. So a bogey is a... Well, I think everyone... Does everyone know what a bogey is?
No, they don't.
Okay, it's the stuff that comes out your nose.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this is Monster Bogey, and it's a children's book for, I would say, age seven plus. And it's about a little boy called Frank who picks his nose, and he makes a tower out of his bogeys, and he lives in a castle, a tumble down castle. And one day the tower gets struck by lightning and turns into a bogey monster. It's like Frankenstein meets bogeys, you could say. And then there's an adventure that takes place in the castle, and somebody who wants to steal the castle, and it's like a big sticky comedy
adventure,
an adventure,
action adventure,
a proper adventure.
Remind us of the age group, the target age group for this.
So it's 7 plus, 7 to 12s,
yeah.
7 to 11s. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm just looking for some pictures. So the illustrator is a guy called Owen Lindsay, who's Australian. And he has done, I'm in love with the illustrations. Look, there are some slugs in the story.
Anna is showing a picture in the book of some slugs, very nicely drawn by Owen...
Lindsay.
Owen Lindsay.
And... here you can see like a little scene of that's the end.
This is Frank outside in the garden. There's an action scene here with lots of things going on outside
lots
a castle.
Of bats, lots of sloppy,
lots of animals,
lots of
sloppy, and things.
Sloppy bogey monster.
A point of vocabulary. You said a bogey is the stuff that comes out of your nose, but several things can come out of a person's nose.
They have.
We should specify the difference.
We should. Would you like to do a quiz?
Well, before we get to the quiz,
okay.
I would like to just establish the difference between a bogey and snot.
Ah,
okay, this is very important, of course, listeners, right? So snot, which is uncountable, how much snot.
I suppose you could measure it in a measuring jug.
Yeah, but it's an uncountable noun.
Yes, it
in
is.
In the sense that we don't say a snot. It's not snots or a snot. It's some snot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, well... this is really lovely stuff that we're talking about here. But, you know, they like that, don't they? The kids, you know, they like that sort of
stuff. They love a little
root stuff.
Around.
Yeah. So, snot, yeah. So snot is the green sort of liquidy stuff that comes out of your nose when you have a cold.
That's right, yeah. Or even when you don't have a cold, like just the translucent stuff.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, I should have, like, checked this before I came on, but apparently we swallow... a very considerable amount of our own snot every day. It's like enough to fill, you know, a mug or two, because it just goes down the back of our throats. It's a very natural process.
Yeah.
Like, everyone thinks it's disgusting. And there are disgusting elements, obviously. But that is it's a natural process, yeah.
Right, okay. So that's snot, the kind of the liquidy stuff. It can be clear, and it can be, at its very worst, it can be a thick green
sludge.
Or sludge.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And then bogeys are the more solid version,
yes,
let's say.
The things that you can scrape out.
Yeah.
Bogey. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know those wonderful moments when, probably when you're alone... you might.
Well, have you been on the metro? people often go on alone here when they pick their noses.
Yeah, sometimes people do pick their nose in public, which is always interesting to see. But a bogey would be the kind of solid version of snot that can be picked from the nose and maybe rolled into a ball.
That's right, and that's
collected
what, that's
in
what
a
Frank
pile.
Does. Yes,
as Frank does in the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if it gets struck by lightning, it can turn into an actual living monster made of bogeys.
Yeah, yeah, because it's got human cells in it. It's like
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some science fiction involved.
There's definitely science fiction. Yeah,
there's some potential. It's sort of based in reality to an extent. Yeah, the human.
Well, it's like almost like cloning electricity, like Frankenstein.
Like Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah. He puts
all of those bogeys all jammed up together. All those human cells. All it needs is lightning
it's
to strike,
spark.
and it will come to life
yeah,
as it
knows?
Does in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. this is good. So you before we get onto the vocab about bogeys and stuff, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the book, right? So we know what
yeah,
it's
yeah.
called. It's currently, you're doing it's like a proper publishing deal.
Yeah, yeah, so I should say it's published by Chicken House. Here, you can see their little logo. And at Chicken House, if you can't see it. Which is a brilliant publisher in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me just move the microphone as close to you as I can get it so that we can hear your voice nicely. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's a traditional publishing deal, she says, banging on the desk to give you some nice noise for the podcast.
Yeah, that's become a feature of of the show now. So, okay, what inspired you to write Monster Bogey then?
So I am not obsessed with bogeys, which, mm-hmm. you know, you could imagine that I would be, having written a book about it and talking about it. Mm. So basically, for ages, I've been wanting to write a children's book. So I was a journalist for years, doing lots of travel writing, but I've always felt like a kid. Like, I really often don't feel that I've ever properly grown up, and wanted to write about stuff that makes me laugh even now as a grown up. And in the UK and in the States, there's a writing association called everyone calls it Scooby, and it's a society for children's writers with lots of information about publishing and how to get an agent and things like that. And every 2 years they run a competition called Undiscovered Voices, and I thought I should really try and see if I could get my story in the Undiscovered Voices competition, because they have an anthology that they send out to publishers and things.
So you already had the story before you?
No, didn't have the story. And so I thought, what could I do? And one day I was reading, I don't know if anyone knows Fungus the Bogeyman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by Raymond Briggs.
I know it, yeah. And I grew up reading that.
Yeah. And for people who don't know it, Fungus the Bogeyman isn't made of bogeys. He's a bogey in the sense of being a monster, because that's also the other meaning of the word bogey, like the bogeyman that you see in like American horror films.
Although in America they call him the bogeyman.
The bogeyman, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the bogeyman in British English, right. Yeah. Right, kind of a monster that lives in the cupboard or something.
And Fergus lives underground, I think, and yes. He's revolting, and there are mushrooms that grow on
him. Lots of mushrooms slime. Yeah.
And mud and sewers even. I think there's like, it's quite pretty disgusting
stuff, yeah.
Anyway, so I was reading that to my son, and I suddenly thought, because Fergus is green.
Fungus.
Yeah. That's another character in book two. So Fungus is green, and I thought, but hang on, he's green, and he's a bogeyman.
Yeah.
But he's not made of bogeys. And then I started thinking, is there anything that's made of bogeys that's like a bogey monster? And I mean, there are people who'd written about bogey monsters, but it tended to be more like for younger people, mm-hmm. for like even younger than seven.
Yeah.
I thought, it made me laugh. I don't know, it just made me laugh, the idea of it. And I thought, well, how would a bogey monster come alive? And I thought, well, it'd have to be like something like Frankenstein. I thought, well, how would it come alive like Frankenstein? And I thought, it has to be a bogey pile. And how would that come about? I was like, well, it'd have to be a little boy. I wanted a boy, because I've got a son, who picks his nose. And it was just sort of
one like thing led to another.
Yeah. The train of thoughts just went, and I just started writing it, and it made me laugh. And I thought, oh, that's it. If it makes me laugh, it's quite. It's just pure pleasure, like for myself initially. And then I entered the competition genuinely, not thinking anything would happen. And it was one of the texts selected. And so so cut a long story short, it ended up finding a publishing house, which is Chicken House. So. Yeah,
and the rest is history, and here it actually is.
And yeah. and now there's a book two, which is coming out, called Monster Stink, which will be out this summer. Yeah, so the story continues.
So yeah, you got this one published, and then immediately started writing book two, Monster Stink. Well, we could talk about that like later on, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there some sort of message or moral to the story? Because a lot of stories have a moral, like a point, a message to them.
Yeah. So there's actually two things. One is actually quite a serious thing which I'll go into in a second. And both of them are quite serious, actually. But the initial one was that I wanted a story, because there's lots of, you know, rotten stuff going on in the world at the moment. And I wanted to have a message that when we are alive, no matter who we are, where we are, just because people think we're unsavory doesn't mean they can get
unsavory.
Yeah, doesn't mean.
You mean sort of like disgusting?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But in the large, you know, the largest sense, or someone who you don't appreciate,
right,
doesn't mean that you have the right to eradicate them, to like take them off the earth. And so through the bogey monster, he's alive, and you discover as you read the book that in fact he's incredibly intelligent. He talks to animals using telepathy. He's sort of like the incarnation of the mysteries of life, sort of thing. And so you're rooting for him to survive. And that was the message, that you can't just get rid of things that you don't
just because he looks on first glance, he looks kind of disgusting because he's made of bogies.
Yeah, yeah.
He still has a right to exist.
Exactly.
He has the right to survive. And if you just look beyond the bogey stuff, there's actually an extraordinary person in there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. And then the other thing, which I realised totally after having written it, was that we had our son through IVF, mm-hmm. Which is, test tube baby.
In vitro fertilization.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is the creation of life outside the body.
Mm.
And once I'd written it, I thought, oh my goodness, I've created this character who comes alive outside the body. So I'm not saying my son is a snot monster, although, he does produce a lot of snot. But I was like, yeah, okay. So that sort of fitted in with what I was going through at the time as well. Like,
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting though.
The depth to a bogey monster story.
Deep hidden meanings behind these sorts of things. There's music involved in your book as well, isn't there?
Yeah. So, like in a previous life in Paris, I used to do cabaret. And not like Moulin Rouge cabaret, like Dîner Spectacle cabaret.
So what's Moulin Rouge cabaret
okay.
and what's Dîner Spectacle cabaret?
Okay, so Moulin Rouge cabaret is how you imagine the typical Parisian cabaret with all the ladies with their boobs out and the feathers and the music. And
kicking their legs in the air.
Yeah. The can-can.
The can-can. Yeah.
And Dîner Spectacle cabaret is like more... sort of intimate. You go to a cafe and you have a little show that's going on to entertain you while you're in the cafe. And that was that. So I was doing that.
Singing.
And then after that, that led to me doing electro pop.
Yeah.
And for like quite a while, I was like trying to find a record label, blah 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 blah. And it was at the time when where CDs disappeared. That's gonna sound old now. And streaming hadn't quite come up, and it was just really bad timing. So nothing happened with that. But I've always loved writing songs, and I love musicals as well. And I thought, what a nice touch it would be. If I, as a child, I would have loved to have songs that I could listen to that accompanied the books.
Mm-hmm.
So I got together with a composer friend who we'd already done stuff with, Xavier Bussy, and also a pianist, Sébastien Joly. And we did two songs for the book. So at the end, like there were QR codes that you can scan and listen to the song. So one of them is called Snotball Disco, which is like a fun... disco-y number.
Yeah, actually, like, we were listening to it the other day and my daughter was dancing around.
Was it? Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
No, it's catchy.
It's great.
And it's just pick it. Yeah. And that's in the song, you have to listen to it. And then the other one is Achu, and the mother in the story is an opera singer. And I used to have opera lessons, even though I would never, ever be good enough to be an opera singer. But, the classical music, placing your voice, etc. So I thought I would try and sing an operatic song about sneezing. So we wrote Achu.
Yeah.
And
that one, I mean, you say you'd never be good enough to be an opera singer, but
no.
Crikey, your voice is amazing.
It can get high, but it.
It can get very high.
Yeah.
You've got the power and you've got the range, meaning that you can go high and you can, you're in tune. Which is obviously important.
Yeah.
But what's lacking then if you're not good enough to be an opera singer?
No. If you see people on stage, like in proper productions, they're
extraordinary.
They're extraordinary.
The control they have.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons I started writing my own songs, was because I couldn't sing. I was frustrated that I couldn't sing all the Broadway songs. There would always be a little moment where I couldn't belt it, or I couldn't quite bridge the voice how I wanted to. And so I wrote my own stuff so that it wouldn't show.
So you could
I could get around it.
Exactly what you needed to sing.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we listen to a sample?
Oh yeah, if you
I
want.
I can do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is my computer still awake?
And so
I hope it's still recording.
Yeah, so obviously, like, both the songs are about
yeah, we're still going.
About bogeys,
naturally
snot.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, which one do we want first?
Maybe a chew first.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. You.
Let's have a chew first. Considering we were talking about opera stuff.
Yeah.
Here it is, listeners. This is like...
Do you want a tissue?
Might need one.
Have you ever had a tickle in your nose?
Yes.
Have you? Yes.
Yeah, all the time.
It gets you from your head down to your toes.
Yes.
Then there's nothing left to do but let out a sneezy, snotty, snoppy, sticky, and ooh.
Wow.
Don't try to hold it in. It'll make you feel. We should have like a little waltz moment now.
Yeah, I know.
With nasal slop, if you keep it all inside, it'll come at your behind. There you are.
So what, just run us through those lyrics again?
Yeah, yeah. So hang on, I've got them here.
It's basically, do you ever have an itch or tickle in your nose?
Yeah. Have you ever had a tickle in your nose? It gets you from your head down to your toes. Then there's nothing left to do but let out a sneezy, snotty, sloppy, sticky, achoo. Don't try to hold it in. It'll make you feel so grim. Your eyes will pop with nasal slop.
Well, the snot will come out.
Yeah, come
of
out your eyes.
Eyes.
Yeah, yeah. If you keep it all inside, it'll come out your behind.
Oh God, you don't want that.
And who wants snot around their bot? A bot is your bottom. Just let rip. We didn't hear this bit. There. Just let rip. Go for the goo. It's the only thing to do. Just let rip. It's a breeze. It's the only way to sneeze. There you are. That's like yeah.
Okay, wonderful.
That amused me.
Lovely, yeah, yeah. No, it's funny. I like the what was about the line about the bot?
Who wants snot around their bot?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no one. Okay, let's have snotball disco. So, when does this appear in the story?
Oh, this is at the end. So, okay. I won't tell everybody in case they would like to read it. Mm. What happens at the end? But there is a reason. That the songs that Mum sings this song, and Lucy Legs, the spider, there's a spider who does a cabaret in I bet you can't guess where that came from, like a cabaret story. So it's the Snotball Disco is sung and written by Lucy Longlegs, the cabaret singing spider.
Okay, so basically, can you imagine a party and people dancing and grooving?
And I should just say there's a wolf and a dolphin because. In the book, there is a weird hedgehog who does impressions of other animals, and he is also in the song at the end.
Yeah, because I did hear a dolphin in this track, and I was thinking, why is there a dolphin in there? I thought it's great. I love that you know, the dolphin noise is one of my favourite animal noises, but, you know, I did wonder why that was in there. Anyway, here we go, Snotball Disco. This is the one that got my daughter dancing around the living room with some... pretty good moves, I have to say. Yeah, I'm very pleased to see that. She's got the moves.
She's got the swing.
Yeah, yeah. She does some kind of funky moves with her feet.
That's cool. Step into the light, greeny, greeny. Just say greeny is also a bogey.
Right. Important synonyms. There was the dolphin. Did you hear it?
Just pick it.
Yeah.
If you're feeling sad, you can't
think what to say. Just pick it.
Yeah. Snotball disco.
Step into the light. There's the dolphin. All right.
There you are. And my son's singing on that as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I managed to record his voice going, just pick it. Yeah.
So very kind good.
Of, yeah, yeah. Just hear it.
Very good.
I think he was like,
good.
Like four when he did that. Yeah.
Okay, great. So what about the bogey vocabulary? So there's a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So
obviously we talked about bogeys and snot, but in the back of the book,
I invented lots of words. Yeah. And like you probably gathered from like the beginning of this conversation, I said to Luke, I was like, oh, really want to do a quiz so you can see if you can guess the names of the things in the book. And
So I would say these are words that you've made up yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These are made up words for bogeys.
For bogeys.
Just other words that maybe kids might create, because you like the way kids come up with new words for things all the time.
Yeah.
So these are made up words for bogeys, right? And you made them up, or you made them up with your son?
No, I made them up myself. Okay. Yeah, I didn't make them up myself. Yeah, I did.
But from a... these are maybe only words that you use in your family, maybe, right?
Not even.
No, just you.
Although I've started... Now they're written down, I've started to use them. But,
right.
But you'll see, they're not things that you... They're not normal words that you would, you know, place in an everyday conversation.
Yeah, they're made up words that no one else uses. But the interesting thing is, like, the way that we make up words
and
the way that we can play with language is quite interesting.
Yeah.
So you're going to... So what's the quiz then? What are you
going to
do?
Well, so like, I'll tell you the what I have come up with, the name of the type of bogey, and you have to say what sort of bogey you think it is.
Okay.
And then I'll read to you what I wrote.
Okay, then. Right, let's go.
So, okay, Klingenglob.
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 Yeah.
All right, so if I break this down, we've got the word kling... And glob,
yeah,
right. So a cling is to hold on to something,
yeah.
Like you would cling on to something. Like for example, when my daughter doesn't want to go to school,
she'll cling
onto my leg or cling onto my coat like that.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't do that so much anymore, but at the beginning of school, you know, she might cling on to me like that. So a Klingenglob, and a glob is like a.
It's like a squidgy ball, isn't it?
Like a soft ball.
Yeah, like a
of slime.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So I suppose this is a soft bogey that sticks to your finger. You can't get it off.
Nearly. So it is a frustrating bogey, recognisable by its refusal to unstick itself from the wall of your nostril.
Oh, you can't get it off the wall of the nose.
If you retrieve a Klingenglob, you can give yourself a pat on the nose.
Like, well, normally
well done, a pat on the back.
Normally a pat on the back, but in this case, pat on the nose. Yeah. Well done. Okay, a Klingenglob. So that you see, there is within these made-up words, there are other words that are actually useful vocabulary. I mean, obviously, a Klingenglob could be a useful one if you're like, tell you what, I've got a Klingenglob. I can't.
And someone would probably understand it in the context of like, if you're like, oh, I've got a really annoying Klingenglob.
Because the word cling
and Klingenglob
and glob.
Yeah. It'd have to be someone you know very well.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're like, sorry, who are you?
Yes. The waiter in the cafe. Yeah.
Are you ready to order, sir? Hold on a minute. I've got a bit of a Klingenglob. Can you show
got
me
a Klingenglob issue.
Where's the toilet, please? Yeah. Okay, next.
Okay, so a fresgoo.
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 Fresgoo. Goo.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like alfresco dining, which is where you're outside.
Yeah.
And goo. Is it like snot that's run out of someone's nose?
So fresgoo is a fresco. You were almost there. A fresco, like in Italy, you know, like a fresco on the wall.
Yeah, like a panel, an engraved wall.
Like a wall painting.
Right, a wall painting, of course.
Yeah. A fresco of bogey stuck on the wall, revealed only when furniture, primarily a child's bed, is deplaced. When an adult discovers a fresco, they usually faint or scream a lot.
This is very interesting because this, if parents will know, if you move your child's bed, you might reveal...
You might find that they've been, you know, having a bit of a pick.
And wiping it on the wall.
Yeah. There you
and
are.
And so that's a fresco.
A fresco.
A fresco of goo.
A fresco of goo. Yeah.
Okay.
all right. This is a tricky one. Okay. I don't know. I'll do the other one before it. Let's see. Tickle toot.
Tickle toot. Well, I know what a tickle is. It's like something that, like, you can tickle someone and it makes you laugh or something. But also, if you've got something in your nose, it might tickle.
It's tickling you.
It's tickling your nose. Ugh. You've got to try and rub your nose to stop it tickling. Tickle what?
Toot.
Tickle toot.
Yeah.
Toot. You would toot a horn. That's to toot a horn or toot a trumpet.
Yeah.
Tickle toot. Is this where you kind of blow your nose to... Is it a verb or a noun? It's a noun.
It's a noun.
A tickle
noun.
Toot.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, it could turn it into a verb if you wanted.
To like, tickle toot.
Yeah. I just tickle tooted. I don't know whether they know. I don't know whether they work. But it's a noun.
Is it to kind of snort air through your nose to try to stop it tickling you?
No, it's a noun. It's a light, feathery bogey that both tickles your nose as you breathe and causes a whistling sound.
Right.
Everyone gets them.
Yeah.
But no one knows what they're called. They
light,
do.
Feathery bogey.
That's
that
right.
Tickles and causes a whistle sound.
And yeah. A tickle toot can be fun if you're musically inclined, annoying if you're not.
Yeah,
and you are. You've got lots of guitars around you.
If you discover you've got a tickle toot in your nose, you can have fun.
Yeah, you're trying to place it. Deplace it? Is that an English word? No, that's French.
That's a bit of French.
They are in here too long. You try and move it.
Try and move it.
Yeah.
You try and make it waggle from side to side.
Or displace, but that would be like displacing hundreds and thousands of people, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Or water or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, you just try and move it or dislodge it.
Yes, dislodge. That's a better word.
Dislodge it. Where it's lodged in your nose and you try and dislodge it to get it out. Or maybe try and play with that whistling sound. Try and see if you can whistle a tune.
Yeah, God save the king.
Okay, next.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UFB.
UFB?
Yeah.
That's an acronym.
Yeah.
UFB, flickable bogey.
Nearly. Unidentified flying bogey.
Oh.
It's a sneaky little greenie that whooshes out of your nostril while you're talking to somebody. If this happens to you, there's nothing you can do except watch it fly.
Right. Yeah, true.
So it's one of those embarrassing moments. You can't, and you don't want to point it out.
Yeah.
Especially if it lands on the person.
You just have to enjoy the flight of the UFB, don't
yes.
you, in that situation. What can you do?
Let me try and see. There's another one. Do you want the last one? How many more? There are only 11.
Just give me a couple more. This
okay.
is good.
So a goo-wa.
A what?
A goo-wa.
A goo-wa.
Yeah.
A goo-wa.
Yeah.
Well, goo is another word for a slimy, sort of liquidy substance.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-specific slimy goo, like ectoplasm or snot.
Yeah.
That's goo. And goo-wah.
Wah.
Wah.
I should probably say like wah. I'd probably pronounce it more like that.
So wah, it's the sort of noise a ghost would make. Wah, like that.
No, not really. No. I would, no.
It's just wah, like exciting,
wah.
Exhilarating, like as if you're going on a roller coaster.
I would
wah.
Say so. I would say surprise. I'm giving it away now. I'd say surprise.
So it's a bogey that pops out of the nose unexpectedly.
Almost. It's a misleadingly long, stringy bogey whose name reflects the startled cry of its owner as it comes out. Goo-wah always starts small, but get longer and longer the more you blow. Well, something of the annoying ones that you just can't get to the end of.
Or I was thinking...
Often yo-yoing out your nostril.
Yo-yoing, boing, up and down. Are you okay, listeners? Yeah, you can handle the bogey talk, I hope. We did toilets before. Here we are now talking about noses and bogeys, all right?
But it's all perfectly natural.
Who else will deal with this subject? I have to go to the places that other English language podcasters will not go.
That is very true, because it's all part of life, isn't it?
How else are you going to know about the how to describe the green goo that comes out of your nose and the various varieties of it as well? So this could be, I'm imagining, when someone picks their someone, not me, just someone. Picks
well, neither of us ever pick our noses.
No,
like,
no, of course, my nose is always clear.
Yeah,
just
me too.
Always. I wake up that way and I go to sleep that way.
Yeah.
The nasal cavity and nostrils are always perfectly pristine and clear.
Yes.
No, I'm talking about other people.
Yeah.
And children who, you know...
Especially children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that would be when a person picks their nose and picks what they think is a dry, normal bogey, but what they don't realise is that it's got a long tail.
Yeah, it's like a comet, isn't it? It's like a slimy comet.
It pulls out a long, slimy tail that seems to go on forever.
Yeah. Yeah. There you are. Right, shall I do one last one?
Yes, please.
Okay, so, right, let me see. Okay, yeah, a brittleberry.
A brittleberry. This
is
nice.
Yeah, it's quite a pretty name.
It's lovely.
As far as bogeys go, it's a brittleberry. Yeah.
So a berry we know, right, listeners? Strawberry, raspberry, blueberry, blackberry, like those little bits of little fruits that grow on bushes and trees.
Yeah.
Brittle is a nice word. Brittle means it can crack and break and fall apart quite easily, like a biscuit.
Yes.
Right, a kind of brittle biscuit that might crack. If you dip it in the tea, if it's very brittle, half of it might break off. Right, so it's brittle, easily broken. A brittle berry is a bogey that's maybe quite dry and might crack up and break into little pieces.
Yeah, you got it. So it's a crisp, fragile booger, because booger is also another name for bogey.
American.
And it's shaped like a berry. And brittle berries are more common in summer when the weather is hot, as they lack moisture. Do not try to roll them. As their name suggests, they are brittle and crack under pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I was a kid... if I picked my nose at my grandmother's place, she would go, up, jump, 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 like that.
That would be a good name for a bogey, wouldn't it? A jump, 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 which is the sound that someone makes when you pick it.
When you pick it.
In an appropriate
moment. The sound a grandparent makes when they see their grandchild about to deposit a bogey somewhere.
Well, you weren't very wise about getting rid of them then, were you?
Because no,
if she saw it.
I wasn't sneaking around.
Yeah, yeah.
But unless
you didn't
have
a secret bogey cupboard like Frank.
He has a special
cupboard.
Yeah, where
Mum and Dad don't
them.
Know. It's it's castle secret.
I hadn't developed that technique. So but she didn't outlaw picking your nose. That was allowed.
Yeah, as long as you had a tissue.
As long as you put it in a tissue.
Yeah.
It was quite a reasonable
What I find amazing about having kids is that actually you forget from how much, when we were little, quite how much bogey picking was a part of everyday life. And then when you see them do it, they do it all the time. And it makes them laugh. My son will come up and he'll have a little bogey in between his fingers and he'll say, "Which hand's it in, Mommy?" I'm like, "I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Put it in a tissue."
Neither hand, hopefully.
Guess which hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I remember there was a kid in my class at school who would... eat his bogeys.
Oh yeah, in front of everybody.
But I think he did it because it was the most stealthy way to deal with it.
Ah.
So he'd pick the bogey and then, thinking that no one was looking, he would quickly eat it.
Ah.
But that's, I think, because he was afraid that he'd get caught with it, or that if he put it somewhere someone would see it.
So
he
got rid of it quick.
To just get rid of the evidence.
I read somewhere, and I don't want you to take this as the law, but I read it appeared at the time, and I can't say where it was from, but it appeared like a very proper scientific article that
a respectable scientific journal.
Yeah, that there are some scientists who think that eating bogeys, which everybody does, because there's no reason necessarily to eat them.
Well, you did say before that we, without choosing to, ingest quite a lot of our own snot. During the day,
there we are. Ding, ding, ding.
Scientists have said that eating bogeys.
Well, but they contain lots of bacteria, and in our guts, we need bacteria. And so, I presume your bogey would have to contain the right sort of bacteria for your gut. But there is a link.
Uh-huh.
But it's not as bad for you as we would think.
Yeah. We on the surface, we think it's disgusting because we just don't want to see it happen. But it might not be as unhealthy as we think.
Yeah. And apparently that you have more chance of putting the wrong bacteria into your nose with your finger than actually eating the bogey.
So it's putting the finger in the nose that
you should be concerned about. You make sure your fingers are clean when you pick your nose.
Okay.
Which, I don't know if it... Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Monster Bogey, now available, everybody. Your kids will love it. And there's music in it as well. And so get involved. And you're doing a proper signing. You're signing copies of the book. So you're, I mean, you know, this is like a proper publishing deal where you're going to be sitting down in like one of the most popular, well-established bookshops in Paris.
No, it's exciting.
And you're going to be sitting there with a
with my green pen. I've got a green pen specially.
Signing copies of the book and everything.
No, it's cool.
How does it feel to be a published author?
Very, very good, because I wrote for newspapers and travel writing, written travel guidebooks, but for a fiction, and you know, it's really hard. It is really hard getting to the end of a story, and it's hard then sending it out to the world, and then there's no guarantee that because you've finished it that someone will take it on. So I feel a massive amount of contentment to having got to this stage, and also the book is for me writing it, and I hope for people reading it, it's just joyous. It's disgusting, but then kids like gross. I like gross. It makes me laugh. I love a good fart joke. I love all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I think lots of even grown ups like secretly still like that kind of thing. But,
yeah, but it's all right, everyone. You know?
It makes me laugh anyway. Yeah. And so to know that there's something that I find joyful and the music, like it sort of makes you want to get up. I like the idea it's out there, and even if it just makes one child happy for an hour.
Yeah.
Then I think that's massive. It's like, yeah, so I'm really pleased. And having lived in Paris, it's like, for more than 20 years, it's like, it feels really good going into a bookshop that I'd walked past for so many years thinking, oh, one day it'd be great to have my book in there. And now today it's in there. So, it's cool.
Well done. Thanks. Brilliant. And good luck with number two as well.
Yeah, which is... Number two, the book, not number two, to the toilet.
What you do in the toilet.
Yeah. It always gets back down to toilets.
It always gets back to the toilet humour.
Yeah.
Okay, really good. Now, you want to stick around and talk for a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm happy to, yeah.
Yeah, just whack my hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Just whack the microphone, whack the...
I'm a noisy guest.
It's a small room. Because I wanted to ask you about your other writing work that you've done in the past too.
Yes.
So this is your first work of fiction, but as you said, you've written for newspapers and things before, and you've written travel guides.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a travel writer.
Yeah.
As well.
So for quite a few years, I was like the sort of the Paris expert for like the Times, the Sunday Times, and the Times. I'd do all the.
Paris expert for the Sunday Times. So the Sunday Times.
It's an unofficial title, but like I would be their go-to person for the, at the time, for like a while.
You've got newspapers in the UK. You have your daily newspapers, Monday to Saturday. And then on Sunday, they often will do a big edition, the Sunday edition.
Yeah, yeah.
Which includes lots of extra stuff, lots of supplements and things.
Yeah.
Including there will be a travel supplement, which is like a magazine that comes with the Sunday edition of the newspaper.
And then it was great. You could like sit for hours and just like go through the paper, couldn't you?
Right. Yeah. And they would often include pieces about Paris.
So sometimes, that's right. And so sometimes for that newspaper, or at the time, it unfortunately during COVID, with everything, all the travel stopping, the magazine folded. Actually, it was the Sunday Times Travel Magazine. Wait, ha ha ha! It folded.
The magazine folded.
Yeah.
But you mean the magazine closed?
Closed. Yeah, we say it folded.
It shut down.
Yeah. And so that was like the glossy magazine that you would buy as a separate magazine as well.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. So I did that. Yeah, for a while, and then I bought one just to show anybody. So Frommers, there's an American publisher, and so I've written like seven books for them, seven guidebooks.
Anna is showing me the Frommers Easy Guide to Paris. This is the 2020 edition.
Yeah, I couldn't find the 2021 one. Actually, I think it's because it didn't happen with COVID.
Right.
And so
okay.
I'm just doing the other one now, for ready to come out next year.
But this, the book that we're talking about here is a travel guide to Paris, published by Frommers, written by you. And my God, there's loads of stuff in here.
There's loads. But, the weird thing about writing anything to do with travel is that people like come up to me afterwards and they'll say, oh, do you know a really good restaurant? And the moment they ask that question, Everything that I've ever written disappears from my brain, yeah. And I can never ever remember anywhere good. I'm like,
it's because you've taken it out of your brain and put it in there.
That's
the book.
Exactly it.
So it's not in your brain anymore.
I need to remember it because it's on the page. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So travel writing. Now I've got some questions here. Do I need to look at the questions?
I don't know.
I guess I do. What's it like? What's it like being a travel writer?
It's really cool.
Where have you...
Travel writer. I'm like a fake travel writer because
why?
There are travel writers who leave the country that they live in and then they go and travel to visit other cities and write about it. I write about Paris and France. I have written a little bit about the States when I went on holiday. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think I've written about Britain necessarily, not very much anyway. And I've never written about any other countries. So I'm like a France and Paris kind of... writer.
Yeah.
But it falls in the travel writing category because for people who buy the guidebook, it's for when they travel.
I see.
Yeah.
But you're not...
That's the only reason.
You're not jetting off to different locations.
No.
And then writing in a sort of very romantic sort of lifestyle.
No.
No, okay. So no. When if people find out that you are a travel writer or that you've done travel writing, what do they normally say to you?
Oh, they normally think that's really cool.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I've always dreamt. Lots of people dream that they'd be a travel writer. Yeah.
What are the perks of doing that work?
The perks.
Meaning like the little good things that you get.
Yeah, the sort of memorable extras or unusual, not necessarily extras, the unusual things that you get that you wouldn't usually get.
Or generally just the plus points.
The plus points, yes. That's a better description.
So the perks, yes. What are the perks of travel writing?
Yeah, well, the perks are that you get to visit lots of different places and discover restaurants and hotels and museums and stuff like that. Yeah,
brilliant.
So it's really good.
So what are some of your favourite experiences that you've had as a travel writer?
I think so. One of my most embarrassing experience. So, mm-hmm. We'd gone to the me and my husband had gone to test the Grand Hotel. I think it's du Cap Ferrat, which is in the south of France, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is a palace hotel. It's like an amazing, really chic hotel. And that day, Whitney Houston. So it was before she died. She checked out. And the director of the hotel came out to meet us, and we were like we had a really tiny hire car, like that no one else who was staying in the Palace Hotel like had these sorts of cars, and it was a car that was so small that you couldn't see that it had four doors,
right?
And and so we met the director. He showed us around the hotel. We had an amazing meal, an amazing stay. And the next day, he wanted to say thank you for visiting us, etc. So he wanted to help us put our baggage back into
the car.
So what you have to know is like if you're doing like a 2-week stint of research for the guide, for any of the guides or for articles or whatever, there are, you tend to eat a lot, you tend to drink a lot. And there are moments where you, like we would have a lunch at lunchtime, like a really big meal. And then in the evening, we would also have a really big meal.
Yeah.
And at one point, you just can't cope with all the rich food.
Yeah, it gets a bit too much.
Yeah. So what? On just before we'd gone to the hotel, we had stopped off in McDonald's and shoved the packet under the seat. And so the director of the hotel, very distinguished man, came out and was trying to help us put the bags in. And he, because he couldn't see there were four doors on the car, he opened the front seat and tried to move the chair back, but it slipped and he fell, and his head landed in our scrunched up, old McDonald's packet.
So he tried to move the chair,
yeah,
and he slipped and fell forwards
with his head onto our McDonald's.
And he pushed his face into the scrunched up McDonald's packages that you'd hidden under the seat.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And then he and then he said, have a lovely rest of your trip. Very perfectly, as if he'd not seen anything. But, we all knew that it was because we'd eaten in McDonald's.
Not only did he see the packages, but his face was squashed into them.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
goodness.
Yeah, and then that was quite funny. And I'd had and another moment. And the Camargue, have you ever been to the Camargue?
I have been to La Camargue, or the Camargue, yeah. which is a place right down the south of France where...
Mm. It's in the Mediterranean, isn't it?
But it's sort of... Salt flats.
Yes.
There's salt flats
yeah.
there. And it's kind of very flat next to the Mediterranean. And yeah, they produce lots of salt there. And there are horses.
So they have cowboys.
Cowboys.
They have the Camarguean cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was staying in one of their, I can't remember what they're called, like a mass or something like that is the name, the local name for like a cottage or a sort of a mansion or...
Right.
And there's a big gap between a cottage and a mansion.
Like but it's a gîte like, kind
a
of...
A gîte, well in, yes, in, yeah.
A gîte is a French thing, which is like a sort of a collection of houses...
Where you would stay.
You'd stay, yeah. but you kind of share it with other people who are staying there too.
It was a hotel in a country house.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll say that. Like, in, and it was called, I think it was called a mass. Anyway, and they had, and it was a ranch, actually, because down south they are Camarguean cowboys, so they have their ranches.
Yeah.
And I had previously, I was living in a very, very tiny flat in Paris and we didn't have any room for, you know, a washing machine in Paris. There were, you know, spaces are very short, small. And so we would take our clothes to the laundrette. And one day I had slipped on the floor in the laundrette and hurt my coccyx, which is the little bone at the base of your back, you know, on your bottom.
What used to be the tail.
Yes, when we were.
When we had tails.
Yeah, yeah.
Many, many.
Yeah, now
hundred...
we just tell tails.
Yeah, we just tell tails.
Yeah.
In those days, we had tails. But yeah, the coccyx, yeah, the bone at the very bottom of your spine, which is kind of like the tailbone.
The very painful part.
Yeah, yeah, if you bump it, oh my God.
And so anyway, so before the trip, I'd hurt my coccyx. And then I went to the Camargue place and we were going horse riding. And I had horse ridden in Britain,
yeah.
But with stirrups where you sort of, you control your rising on the saddle with your legs.
You put your feet in the stirrups and you can and kind of stand up
yeah.
or take the weight off your
bottom.
Bum. Yeah.
Well, the Camarguean cowboys don't have stirrups.
What?
I think they have thighs of steel.
They just
because
hold on.
They
with
literally
their thighs.
Just hold on. And they also don't wear helmets.
And so
I was riding on these horses and we were galloping. I mean, it was amazing. Galloping over salt flats, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, the pain on my bum. It was terrible. So that was like, I remember, yeah, that was a very memorable moment.
The beauty of riding a horse across the salt flats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But contrasted with the horrible pain.
The horrible pain.
The coccyx and going up and down on the horse.
And
imagine what it must be like to be a cowboy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be pretty
tough.
And then there was another moment in Paris. So one of the perks, getting back to the word the perk, is, you know, Paris has lots of palace hotels. And there are places where, you know, your average person, including me, can't go and have a... you know, afford a 1,000 euro meal like once a week or whatever.
Mm.
And so part of the perk was that, you know, for travel writing, you would often test places that you can't usually have access to with your own finances.
Mm.
And we were testing a posh hotel and they brought out, I can say which hotel it is, can't I?
If you like.
Well, yeah.
I don't mind.
At the time, it was the Crillon at the time.
Yeah.
It's changed chefs. But there was this most beautiful little sort of entree thing, like a starter, and it was I think it was with caviar and something under the caviar, and it was served on mother of pearl spoons with a precious wood handle. Like, these are like beautiful spoons that I don't dread to think how much they cost each spoon.
Incredibly expensive. Yeah.
And it was in the old ballroom. I'm hitting the microphone again. In the old ballroom, which is just, it's stunningly beautiful with all the marble and everything. Anyway, so in this room, and in an old ballroom, there are only like about 10 tables. So you have, it's almost like, it's like seamless service. Like, everyone watches you, but you don't get the feeling you're being watched. It's like, it's just perfect. It's like, yeah. And anyway, we both had our, me and my husband had our little mother of pearl spoons. And
mother of pearl,
Yeah, mother of pearl is the shell, you know, the inside of a shell. Of an oyster, no? Yeah, like an oyster. And they have other sorts of shells as well that have mother. It looks like a little rainbowy, shiny.
Yeah, it's the shiny inside sort of layers of certain shells, oysters, including oysters. I mean, pearls come from oysters.
Yes, they do, yeah. And
pearls are created, I guess, over many, many, many years of maybe a grain of dirt.
Must get covered in this.
It gathers this
mother of pearl.
This mother of pearl. I don't know exactly how it works, but anyway, the inside of the shell also has a similar sort of shiny.
And you can chip it off and make things out of it, like jewellery and things like that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So these spoons were made of this stuff. Yeah.
And my husband put his elbow on the table. And he touched the end of the spoon and it catapulted off into the air and smashed on the floor.
Oh, my gosh.
And so straight away they have like the little army of waiters who came over and said, "Don't worry, sir, everything's fine." And just cleaned it up. And the second they left, I did the same thing. I put my elbow and acted like, and we were like, "Oh my god!" Yeah, so that was.
They went away. It was all a bit awkward, but they did it very professionally.
Very, very professionally.
Cleaned up the remains of this spoon that had smashed into millions of pieces.
Yeah.
And you kind of went, "Oh, that was awkward."
And boom, then boom, and did it, and then
smash.
Off into the air. Yeah.
You did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was funny looking back.
Yeah.
But at the time, we're like, "Oh,
oh my god.
I'm sorry." Yeah, yeah, yeah. So travel writing. And also, I mean, you're talking about the perks. Another perk is actually just learning about, like, for Paris. I've written mostly about Paris, occasionally about other cities in France, but mostly about Paris. And it's just so fascinating because you learn, like, real, you know, parts of the history and. So, yeah, it's and all the museums and things like that, yeah.
What's your favourite? If you could give one tip to a visitor to Paris, one tip. But
it's all gone out my ear now. I can't remember anything.
But just anything, anything at all. Someone coming to Paris, right?
Yeah.
They arrive in the city from one of the airports or from Gare du Nord or something, and they're thinking, "Oh, I'm going to spend a weekend in Paris." What would you recommend if you could recommend one thing?
The one thing, which is very touristy, but I think the river is just one of the most beautiful places probably in the world, like as far as cities go, and from the river you get to see like a big a range of monuments. So I would say a boat trip.
Yeah,
it's like that way you sort of see it, and then you can work out and there are some boats where you can get off at different spots and go and just I would recommend that, even though it is very touristy and often people are trying to like find the non-touristy things to do. But if you have to have one, I would say that one.
Yeah, a boat cruise. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, exactly. You get to see some of the best sights in the city.
Yeah.
And that's that area where the river goes through the centre of the city is remarkably beautiful.
Yeah, even like after 20 years here, if I'm having a day when I'm like, "Oh, I'm feeling a bit down," I'll go for a walk and overwhelmed by the beauty, and then it usually makes me feel better.
There's several islands in the middle of the city on the river.
Yeah.
And you can walk across bridges to get to those islands, and that's always a nice place to explore.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really beautiful sort of postcard, like proper
postcard. Yeah.
Picture postcard stuff. And walking up and down the river on either side.
And also you feel, I think that's one of the reasons I like living in Paris, because I love like the 19th century sort of history and things. And of course, lots of the buildings date from that era. Mm. I mean, from before as well. But it's just when you're walking along the river, things haven't, or anywhere in lots of streets, things haven't changed that much. Like shop fronts are different. Cars in the streets are different. But you can generally take a picture of unless, you know, things have been bulldozed, and not many places have. You can say, "Oh, it still looks the same," and I like the fact you really feel like you're walking through history when you you walk through Paris.
And you can, you know, you can find a street corner where there's a cafe and there's tables outside, and you know, like for example, the lamp post will be the same kind of lamp post they use.
And it is stereotypical.
And it, it's
cliche.
Yeah,
but it's true, and it's a.
And then there's a guy playing an accordion in the street, and you're just like, "What this?" You do get that it's moment. Like, it's like, I know it's a touristy thing, but at the same time, you think this is like weirdly timeless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember on my 21st birthday, I was on my year abroad here and my parents were over and I had one of the most memorable, wonderful moments where we ordered a champagne and maybe an ice cream or something. Mm-hmm. And we're on the Île Saint-Louis and we stood outside because it was a nice day and you could see all the monuments, see Notre Dame. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like a really special... It's one. That's why people, you know, travel. It's the most visited city in the world, I think. That's why, isn't it? It's because it's really has that sort of magic that you...
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Mm. But be careful where you walk.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Once.
Because there might be a dog poo on the floor, just saying. Yeah, sorry to, I completely ruined the magic there.
No, I'm sorry, everybody.
You just painted this magical picture and we just talked about the romantic, timeless spirit of Paris and then I had to ruin it. But it's not my fault.
But it's everyone else's fault because they don't clean up after their dogs.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reality of the city.
One day I had the most... I wish I'd been able to film it. It was amazing. So, you know, Place des Vosges? So, in the Marais.
No, remind me.
It's the pink square. You know, the pink. So, there's a, in the Marais, which is on the right bank.
I'll know it, but it's a square, I think it was built by Henry the Fourth or something.
It's lots of pink brick and they've got all the arcades and art galleries under the arcades and there's a park in the middle.
I'm sure I know it, but...
And Victor Hugo, the writer who wrote Les Misérables and The Hunchback of Notre Dame and everything.
He
used to live on there and there's a museum, a free museum actually. You can go and visit and see his old house and they've got a nice cafe. But anyway, that aside. So one day I was in Place des Vosges and somebody had taken the time to... And there were loads of dog poos all around along the edge of the fence around the park. And somebody had put a little French flag in every single dog poo. And at the time, there were these machines called motocrottes. So a crotte in French is a poo, and the moto is like a motorbike. And these were literally motorbikes with like a vacuum on the back that would suck up all the dog poo because it was such a problem that they had to invent a motocrotte. And this poor motocrotte driver had to go and use his own hands to pick out every flag on a cocktail stick from each of these poos before he could suck them up. And I thought that was just the most quintessential Parisian moment when you live here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You're like, you never like, yeah.
Of the contrast of this beautiful spot, the Place des Vosges, and the fact that there were dog poos on the floor, and the fact that the city had introduced these machines that would suck up the poos, but then some ironic person had put little French flags in those poos, and then that poor driver of the motocrotte had to actually pick them all out.
Yeah, before he could suck up.
Before he could suck them up.
Yeah.
But very Parisian moment.
I
remember that used to be a thing. I sometimes would see, for example, someone had sprinkled glitter on one of them. And you'd get flags and glitter on them.
No, that was just a unicorn who'd done it.
That was just a unicorn's poo. Yeah. Right, of course. Okay, that's probably a good place to end. We talked about bogies and talking about poo on the street. Glittered poo.
Can I just tell you?
Yeah.
Like this, I've just been wanting to share this like story for so long because it's a funny story. Just very quickly, how I got into writing.
Oh yeah, of course, I wanted to ask you about that, but anyway, how did you become a writer, Anna?
So
it's not like we agreed that in advance.
So I was wanting to become a writer, and I hadn't become a writer yet, and I was doing press for a hotel, and I'd invited a journalist to come and visit the hotel.
So you were working for the hotel, doing press,
PR.
Public relations, meeting journalists and writing press releases for the hotel.
And one day, this guy turned up with his mum, who was a spa guide writer.
Spa guide?
Yeah, so she was writing guidebooks about spas.
Right.
And it turned out that we found out we had people in common, friends in common. And so, and I said, I've never been to a spa. And she said, my son's going. the next day, would you like to go with him? Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I'd love to go. So I went to this spa and
a spa.
A spa for a massage.
Yeah.
And there's a sauna and things like that.
Yeah.
So I went, had a wonderful massage, and then I wanted to go into the sauna. And the guy who was there, he'd been to loads of spas because his mum was a spa guide writer. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to go in today. So I went in by myself, and having never been to a spa before, I it was very dark and I could just see lots of, in the sauna, I could just see lots of, or a hammam actually, like a Turkish bath, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lots of steam coming out. And as my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I saw there were two little candles illuminating what I presumed must be the seat, because it was so dark, I thought they would light up where you're supposed to sit.
Yeah.
And I sat down, took a big deep breath, and I sat down on the hot coals.
No!
And burnt my bum.
You sat down on the hot coals?
On the hot coals. And screamed. No one came. And I rushed out and had a very, very cold shower. And then I, very embarrassed, I felt. I went and you know, very typically British, feel embarrassed about when something bad happens to you and it's not really your fault.
Yeah.
And I went over to the girl and she went, oh, yeah, the light bulb's broken. And I was like, well, I've just burned my bum, you know, like, and anyway. Yeah. So that day I had to, they put lots of, in France they have a product called Biafine, which is like a burn cream. And they came and put lots of burn cream on my bum. And the guy was with me all the time. Very, very like kindly stayed with me. And it was a day when there were demonstrations and the whole of the city was completely blocked and they called a doctor, but the doctor couldn't come for 6 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
So it meant that I got to spend time with this guy chatting. And as it turned out, he had got a contract to write the MTV guide to France, but couldn't do it because his he wanted to stay in, he was American and he needed to stay in France because his boyfriend was French. And so he needed a carte de, well, I can't remember what they're called, like a working permit. And he'd accepted a full-time job in a press agency. So he said, and I think he was feeling sorry for me that this had happened on his watch.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, I know you, and like, I've seen press releases. I know you can write. And also I'd been freelancing a little bit for literally for free.
Yeah.
For like Time Out, who had their offices in Paris at the time. He said, why don't I put your name forward? And that was for Frommers.
Ah.
And so after, so that anyway, that's why I got my.
So thank goodness you burnt your bum in a spa.
Yeah.
Because if you hadn't, then you would never have been able to write.
No, and I probably would never have written that. Like,
okay.
Yeah. And but so that's the writing part. But very, very quickly, because I know you want to finish. Mm. So when I got back to my flat, at the end of the demonstrations, I've always lived in an area of Paris called Nation, which means the nation. And so quite, I suppose they walk between the Republic and the nation, don't they? So it's sort of symbolically.
It's a big place,
yeah.
A big sort of.
And it can
square,
contain thousands.
Lots of people can,
hitting it again.
Can congregate there.
Yeah.
And in Place de la République, it's similar.
It's similar, and around a big statue.
So these are places where people, when they protest and demonstrate, they tend to go to those places.
They walk between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got out the metro at Nation. And things were starting to kick off, like people were rooting through the bins to look for bottles and the police were throwing gas.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I want to get home quick.
Yeah.
And my flat, I could see part of the square from my flat and I went up to the top floor and I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm about to witness 1968, the student revolution again.
Yeah.
And I opened my window when I heard this big noise. And at that moment, all the gas floated up into my face.
Oh.
And I was there with my burnt bum and crying from all the tear gas. And I was like, why did I move to Paris? it was all obviously just destiny.
Yeah, a slice of real life in Paris where you burn your bum, you get a contract to write a guidebook and then you get tear gassed in your own home.
In your own home. Yeah.
Well. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, really nice to talk to you on the podcast.
It was lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. Just a reminder to everyone that Monster Bogey is now available in all good bookshops.
Yes, bookshops, Amazon, and if you ever go to Britain, it's in all the supermarkets as well. It's in Sainsbury's, Morrison's and Tesco's.
Really?
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, exciting. Okay, Anna, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. So that was Anna Brooke talking about her book, Anna Brooke's book, which is called Monster Bogey, and it should be available wherever you get your books. You know, just the normal major book retailers should have it. Otherwise, check the page for this episode on my website. You'll find a link which will take you to various places where you can get your own copy of this fun book that I'm sure kids would enjoy very much. My daughter's been enjoying it, and it's very good fun indeed. So there we go, listeners. I hope you're doing fine. How are you? You okay? You're doing all right? Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you've been enjoying the recent episodes I've been doing. The last one, the story about Cyril Boggis, the antiques dealer, that went down very well. It seemed that people enjoyed that very much. It is a fantastic story. And so it's good to know that people enjoy those short story episodes. I've got some more of that kind of thing coming up on the podcast. I've got lots of episodes in the pipeline, as I keep saying. But I've got, you know, plenty of things coming up for you. Also, premium content. I've got Series P47, which includes a short story about something that my brother did at school, which could have got him into massive amounts of trouble, but somehow he got away with it. So there's the whole story, plus all the vocab, grammar and pronunciation exercises and stuff going along with that, including the PDFs and everything. So P47 will be published for premium subscribers in the next few days, so you can get your teeth stuck into that. Okay, so there you go, listeners. Thank you very much for listening to my podcast and for, you know, doing the usual things, leaving comments, sharing the podcast with your friends and leaving reviews and things like that. Thank you very much for taking part and for listening all the way through to the end of this latest episode. I'll be speaking to you again on the podcast very soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.